Hello, I am here with audio game developer CAE Jones. On his website, he has a boatload of audio games available. In particular, I've been interested in the action ones like the Sword game. He has a game based on Justice League and Mario. But he's also got interesting stuff like a swamp map editor. Anyway, so I was wondering, most of the people listening to this won't be familiar with audio games. Personally, I've just gotten into the genre myself. So I was wondering if you had any advice for general strategies when playing audio games.
Well, it's kind of difficult to generalize just because I'm coming at it from a completely different angle from what most people would be. So I would start with the basics. Pretty much all of them are going to be best played with headphones rather than through the speakers or anything directly like that.
Yeah.
I guess a good way to get started if you're completely unfamiliar is to try to find something small and simple and see if you can make sense of it. The trouble is, what counts as small and simple for one person might not be quite the same for another.
Actually, on that matter, do you have any recommendations for audio games that might make good starting points, something small and simple?
I would be tempted to suggest Aprons games. Those are from Kaldobsky.com. They're not exactly simple, most of them, but they're pretty straightforward and easy to get into, and a lot of them have some sort of graphics to go with them.
Ah, that's interesting, because I was reading about Swamp, and it was one of the first audio games I had read about having like graphics to accompany it.
Yeah, I think he added graphics to his earlier games, kind of, if I remember correctly, he did this sort of independently. And then when Swamp came along, he actually didn't add the graphics until some players with some residual vision actually asked for it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I don't actually know for sure, but I think the graphics in his other games, like Lunimals and Castaways, are a little less simple, but at the same time, you know, they're still going to be pretty simple because of the nature of the beast.
Yeah, I think that's only fair. As regards your own audio games, how do you choose the sounds that you use?
It has a lot to do with whatever I just have lying around. But it also kind of depends, like, if it's something particularly specific, say, like a fan game of a specific franchise, then I'll try to seek out sounds that match that, like Mario. At some point I went and found a lot of Mario sounds. I think I got all of those from the Mushroom Kingdom. I don't know, this was many years ago, actually. But, usually, I kind of prefer to make my own sounds, but the problem is the sounds I can make on my own are not anywhere near as good as people want them to be. So, pretty much as of roughly the time of the Justice League game, I started trying to move toward more professional quality stuff, which means, you know, downloading what free things I can and trying to come up with whatever commercial sounds I can get my hands on, but that's actually pretty cumbersome just price-wise. So those I basically wind up choosing based on a combination of whether or not I can afford them at the time and if they're, you know, good enough to be worth the price.
Okay. I actually do think I recognize some Batman-esque grunts in Justice League.
Yeah. The voices in there are actually from Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe.
Oh. Okay. That game was interesting. So, there are some troubles regarding, like, professional audio equipment, etc. But are there any, like, aesthetic considerations?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, I know when I first got my hands on tone generators, like, when I first got started with all this, I was using the NCH tone generator, which at the time it had an interface that was really nice, but it's ridiculously expensive, so I've since moved away from it. But when I did that, and, you know, you would generate a variety of sounds based on what sounded nice, and then would just play with it a bit. So, a great many sounds that I was using kind of came out of that. They didn't really necessarily make any sense at the time, but I thought, sounds cool, I'm going to find something to do with it. And for quite a few of them, I somehow managed, and for several others, I didn't.
A lot of experimentation went into this?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever had trouble finding a good sound for something?
Usually. But at the same time, that's usually for bigger original projects that have a really hard time getting off the ground for a variety of other reasons.
There is I did notice on your site one page dedicated to auditions for a fighting game that you wanted to do.
Yeah. Actually, that one's kind of different in the fact that I actually have the game far enough along. I felt like I could post those because I actually had most of it playable. The deal with that is I actually had a larger cast of characters than I had voices available for, so I was trying to see if I could get people to do recordings for those, but no one ever really did. I'm just going to assume that's because the gameplay is kind of screwy.
I have not sat down and played it myself because I'm not any good at fighting games.
Well, yeah. I assume under those conditions that with this one, that would be even more insane, just because of... This was actually the first... The system used in that, anyway, is based on the... Probably, I would call it the first real audio game that I made. I mean, I'd been trying to make games before that, but there had always been something of a graphical component. I had been working primarily in JavaScript, so it was easy to, even just using forms or text output, I would have something like that. Like Mario, I've basically been trying to do Mario pretty much within, ever since the second year that I had any programming skill. The fighting game engine is something I made when I finally decided, you know what, I just want to make something that I can play first and foremost, and then I will set it up for everyone else afterward. And in this case, that didn't wind up quite so easy as I thought, so most people have a very hard time with that specific engine.
It takes a lot of experimentation to find that sweet spot.
Oh yeah. For me, anyway.
When you design levels in your games, do you have a goal, like a theme in mind or some principle of design?
Usually. Sometimes it can kind of evolve as the project develops. But usually I'll come up with something for the game in particular, but sort of like with the fighting game engine there, I'll usually come up with something not intended for a specific game necessarily, so much as just coming up with some sort of programming idea. Like, if you were to look at the source code for my games, there would be pretty consistently, it's just, there's always going to be some unnecessary bit manipulation going on in the background. If you were to ask someone to look at it, they would say it looked ridiculously convoluted and unnecessary. Usually try to obfuscate this if it's not, you know, too important that I manipulate them directly. But, for example, in Mario, the way the map system is designed is, well, it would take a while to explain, but it's kind of counterintuitive. So, what I usually wind up doing is I kind of something like that and then I'll build on top of it. That isn't necessarily how I plan to start out, that's just usually the way things kind of get done.
Okay, so a lot of it is just finding the best way forward as you go along?
Yeah, more or less. I guess what it really comes down to is what's the most fun to work with on a programming level, which isn't necessarily going to be the most efficient in terms of what I want the end result to look like. For example, in Mario, the way the jumping works is very different than it would be in the original NES game.
Okay. When you say that, do you mean like the physics of it, or some like a more base level programming, how it works?
In the Mario audio game, the whole variation on how you get your arcs is completely different from the way it was, like, in the NES version. Like, in the NES version, you have, you know, your running jumps and things like that. You have, like, three or four different arcs you can do. With this one, it's more like, the way it works is kind of hard to get a specific... I think I probably could have made it work more similarly if I had if I had tried harder to do so. But the way it works now, you pretty much have to... you get an extra jump height at the cost of not really being able to move very far vertically and horizontally simultaneously. So you kind of have to... you kind of have to move up and then move right or left or whatever direction.
Okay, you have to find a balance between how far forward and how far up you want to move.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are some of the subtleties that I have trouble picking up on while playing, and I'm still replaying and trying to get into the groove there. So, in particular, two of your games, well, at least two, were inspired by existing games. There's Mario and then there's Sonic. And I was wondering what in particular inspired you to make audio game versions of those?
Well, I used to be able to see a lot better. I was always legally blind, but I could see well enough to play Mario. That was pretty much the extent of the quality of my vision. And when things got worse, Mario was actually the first one to go just because he's so dang small. And then actually the first time I really noticed it was I was playing Super Mario 3 on the Super Nintendo, where they, where everything's, you know, vaguely desert-themed, the background, they actually changed it in the Super Nintendo version so that it was more orangish, and the contrast was just horrible, and I couldn't see anything anymore, and it was just frustrating as all heck. So I went to, I basically got good enough at programming. Trying something Mario-esque was pretty much one of the first things I was doing. It's just like, I just wanted to play it again.
That's pretty cool that it was a way of reliving that nostalgia and getting back to that game that you enjoyed.
Yeah.
What was the hardest part making an audio game out of Mario?
Really, the hardest part was just figuring out how to make it accessible in the first place. It's, I mean, in hindsight, it looks like it should have been pretty simple to do the way I did, but when I first started on it, I actually had no idea what to do. Like, my first few tries, as I said, were in JavaScript, so I was using, actually buttons for the outputs. I had just like a huge stack of buttons that ran way across the screen. And so everything was all text-based, and I could get a screen reader to read that. It was a lot more cumbersome than it really should have been, just because of the way screen reader navigation works, and you had to know what all the symbols meant, etc. But, when I wound up trying to do it as a straight-up audio game, all I could really think of was to do what I called the accessible camera, which I don't really like that name anymore, and I'm actually kind of trying to move away from the concept, or at least change it a bit, because it feels like it's, well, you can tell I'm trying to recreate more of a mainstream type feel, and blatant accessibility features just kind of clash with that. It's, I mean, there has to be a balance between what you can do in audio and what kind of fits the theme. But at the time, I was focused more on getting it playable than on fitting that deal. So, first thing I could think of was the accessible camera, where you kind of, sort of move a cursor around block by block, and it makes a sound to indicate what's there. And I actually did this quite a while before I had anything releasable. It was like several months, and I couldn't, it was just kind of frustrating trying to just get through the just using that. It wasn't until, several months later, after I had played more audio games, that I actually got the idea for the cues for the platform, pit, and wall sounds. Actually, what really gave me that idea was I hadn't actually played a lot of audio games at the time, so the one that gave me the idea was the first Bokura no Daiboken game, which itself doesn't have particularly great navigation accessibility compared to the rest of that particular series. But it gave me the whole make a sound within X steps idea. I know there are other games that use that for like ledge detection and such, but that was the one that kind of inspired me on that. And basically, once I had that in mind, it was pretty simple just to... The game just sort of grew out exponentially at that point.
That was the moment where things really clicked into place?
Yeah.
Okay. It did throw me off a little at first trying to listen for platforms, but after a little practice, it is pretty intuitive.
Yeah, the platform part seems to be what gives people the most trouble, and I'm not really sure if that's has something to do with just the way it works in general, or if it's just platforming and audio being kind of something that takes getting used to, or if it's just that a large percentage of my audience doesn't have the background to actually know what's going on without a lot more experimentation.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm discovering, that as I experiment more and play different kinds of audio games, like Shadows of Doom and stuff like that, or I think it's Shades of Doom, sorry.
Yeah.
That the more experience I get with different games, it sort of feeds back into itself, and I get more accustomed to listening for things.
I think that actually kind of sums up quite a lot, really, because it's like when you're used to doing things by ear, it's, you know, it's kind of easy to get into most things. If it's sort of more new experience you're not used to, it's just going to be kind of unsettling at first.
Yeah, exactly. I was also wondering if you had a favorite level in Mario.
A favorite what?
A favorite level in your version of Mario.
You know, based on comments I've come across in various places, I have to wonder if I'm going against the norm when I say I was always pretty fond of the water levels. But I don't really know that anything sticks out particularly in my version. I know in the original I was pretty fond of 3-1 for some unknown reason. Actually, it might have just been the color scheme, I'm not sure. But I know that in my version I haven't actually managed to beat the whole game. I'm actually a little worried it'd be possible, just because no one's ever told me that they have or haven't. 8-4 is... I can get to 8-4. That is the last level, and I die quite a lot. So, yeah.
Okay. And finally, just one question to wrap stuff up. When it comes to the theory behind games, which is more important to you? The intent of the developer, the experience of the player, or the essence of the game itself?
Well, I think it's come across pretty clearly to me ever since I've actually started, you know, releasing audio games, that the experience of the player is extremely important. Because, yeah, I can have all the intent I want in everything I do, and if it still isn't quite the same for everyone else, then it doesn't really matter to anyone but me.
I see. So it's a matter of being able to communicate your ideas through that media.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for joining me and talking about your audio games and audio game experiences.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.